The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Well, welcome, family, to episode 2. Of Walking Through the Language of the Heart with our good friend and my co-host, Mr. Chris S. Picking
hey,
up.
Hey, Monty. How are you doing this week?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm having a hard time picking you up, though. Let's see here.
Right?
That's much better. That's great.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to put the phone as close to me as I can.
Chris S. is on the phone, and we are, as I said, in episode 2 of this this brand new show, this brand new workshop, if you will, Walking Through the Language of the Heart. Chris, what are we doing this week?
You know, Monty, we started on the book, The Language of the Heart, which are Bill W.'s grapevine writings. And, you know, we're just really getting started. But the article that we're going to go over tonight is on page 6, and it's called Rules, Dangerous but Unity Vital. So so basically what Bill Wilson was really concerned about when he started the Grapevine magazine, and right around 1945 or so, he was really putting together the structure of the 12 traditions. Mm. And these are some of the early writings about the 12 traditions, maybe early versions of the 12 traditions. He recognized that the groups must form basically best practices to be able to get along and not do things that would be damaging to the meetings or the groups themselves. And so, you know, these are really interesting writings because they're some of the earliest structure that he was putting together for the traditions.
Yeah. Now even just the word rules, I mean, with many people within the 12-step rooms, they hear that word and the hair stands up on the back of their neck, right?
Yeah. And you're going to hear there are no rules. And to a degree, you know, I guess there isn't. To be able to walk into a meeting, mm-hmm. there are very few rules. I mean, if you're really disruptive or you know, there's some things that are just general, general yeah. being in public kind of behavior that's expected, but there are no rules for membership. Now, are there rules, or are there steps, or are there suggestions, or are there musts in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or any other 12-step organization? There's things that that you're going to need to do to be able to get the results that they promise.
So we need to make it very clear that sometimes people get that confused. They think because there's only suggestions, that we don't have to follow by any other kind of principles. And that actually would go against the steps completely, because we're learning new disciplines, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for the most part, a lot of people have not really been getting along very well with the world. And then you show up in a 12-step fellowship, you know, really, really hammered down pretty bad in your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess if someone was emotionally and spiritually healthy, sometimes these traditions may not even, you know, be something that would be necessary even. What Bill Wilson saw when he was traveling around the country, going to all these different groups, was a real need to put together some guidelines, some guiding principles for how a group and the people in the group behave. And, you know, that really is what the traditions are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you'll hear people say, I'm sure you've heard this, there's 36 spiritual principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I think that's kind of simplifying things. Uh-huh. The principles are the steps, the principles are the traditions, and the principles are the concepts. And you can look at it like that if you're a three legacy person. I think there's more. I think there's many, many principles.
Many, many. Yeah.
That we're going to do well by adopting in our lives. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's do our job here and let's get started reading. Okay, this was published in November of 1945, and it's called Rules: Dangerous but Unity Vital. Does Alcoholics Anonymous have a public relations policy? Is it adequate to meet our present and future needs? Though it has never been definitely formulated or precisely stated, we certainly have a partly formed public relations policy. Like everything else in AA, it has grown up out of trial and error. Nobody invented it. Nobody has ever laid down a set of rules or regulations to cover it, and I hope no one ever will. This is because rules and regulations seem to be little good for us. They seldom work well. Were we to proceed by rules, somebody would have to make them, and more difficult still, somebody would have to enforce them. Rulemaking has often been tried. It usually results in controversy among the rulemakers as to what the rules should be. And when it comes to enforcing an edict, well, you all know the answer. When we try to enforce rules and regulations, however reasonable, we almost always get in so Dutch that our authority disappears. A cry goes up. Down with the dictators, off with their heads. Hurt and astonished control committee after control committee, leader after leader, make the discovery that human authority, be it ever so impartial or benign, seldom works long or well in our affairs. Alcoholics, no matter if ragged, are yet the most rugged of individualists, true anarchists at heart. You know, it's funny. I've read just hundreds of books. Monty, you know, I've paid attention to the world of addictive illness treatment and alcoholism treatment for many, many years. And,
yep.
You know, I read a lot of the stuff, a lot of the important articles. And I've never found anybody who can describe the personality and the spiritual condition of an alcoholic like Bill Wilson. He was great at it.
I agree. Absolutely. He was a wordsmith, really. I mean, of his own right. And the thing I love about him, we all learn by repetition, right? And he was able to say the same thing over and over and over again by using different words so you didn't get lost in it. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about his abilities.
Absolutely. And these rules. So basically, in at least the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the great authority figure that has the ability to punish someone for bad behavior is alcohol. There needs to be no, you know, AA police or AA enforcement committees. you know, the behavior that that becomes harmful to other people seems to bring on a state of relapse.
Yeah.
In alcoholics. So Alcoholics Anonymous is almost like a self-cleaning oven. You know what I mean? After a while, you know, if there's really cruddy people doing cruddy stuff, they get burnt off with the rest of the crud, and they just don't seem to stay around long enough. Now Bill Wilson understood that as far as specific members, but I also think that he understood that if groups started to go a little bit too outside the guardrails, the groups could suffer and die. And he was very, very interested in trying to put together some principles so that it would make it more and more unlikely for the groups to become involved in behavior that was going to break the group up.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world sometimes that a group closes if it becomes so toxic and is no longer really an AA group by definition. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are some groups that, you know, I was hoping would go. There were some really, you know, really, really sick groups. And I'm not going to, you know, because I don't judge and, sure, and I don't criticize, I'm not going to name them, you know, but I'd like to, you know,
right.
But they were run, you know, by very, very charismatic psychopaths. And listen, just like there are imperfect people within different churches.
Yeah.
There are imperfect people within different 12-step fellowships.
Yeah.
And you can't judge the church by its members. You can't judge you can't judge AA by specific group members.
That's right.
So also another thing, Monty, you know, I've noticed this on Zooms as people start to migrate back into in-person meetings, you know, mm-hmm. we're speaking to each other now at the tail end of the COVID panic, right?
Right.
We're almost two and a half. We're a little over 2 years into, you know, the outbreak of COVID, and a lot of things shut down. A lot of places that hosted 12-step meetings shut down. So a lot of people ended up on Zoom. So we're seeing the transformation back toward meetings with many, many people. And a really good meeting will go from 70 people to 60 people to 30 people to 10 people to 7 people.
Mm.
And you have to ask yourself, is it time? Is it time? It's a great meeting, you know, but
yeah.
Is it time to close this thing down so people can go to other places, you know?
Right.
And I kind of believe in that too.
Yeah. Yep. Seen it happen and seen it actually birth some pretty powerful groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right. Of course, nobody claims that this trait of ours is to be a sterling virtue. During his first AA years, every AA has had plenty of the urge to revolt against authority. I know I did, and can't claim to be over it yet. I've also served my time as a maker of rules, a regulator of other people's conduct. I, too, have spent sleepless nights nursing my wounded ego, wondering how others whose lives I sought to manage could be so unreasonable, so thoughtless of poor me. I can now look back upon such experiences with much amusement and gratitude as well. They taught me that the very quality which prompted me to govern other people was the identical egocentricity which boiled up in my fellow AAs when they themselves refused to be governed. Wow, that's really a powerful paragraph. And the reason I want to just break it down a little, because it goes all the way back to the stuff that he says on page 60 to 63 in the book Alcoholics Anonymous about selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of our troubles.
Yes.
Various manifestations of self are what had defeated us. We're the self-seeker even when trying to be kind.
Yes.
We're self-will run riot. So what Bill Wilson discovered, from basically the Oxford Group process was that really what his problem was, it was spiritual. It was a spiritual problem, and it had to do with self-consciousness. So if self-consciousness is really the problem, then the solution that the book Alcoholics Anonymous points us toward is God consciousness. And he talks about trying to be the actor running the whole show. He talks about how he had to learn how to stop playing God, all in this paragraph. And that's the third step prep, you know, that we have to come to terms with, you know, the disturbances within our personality that really, you know, seem to believe that we can be happy if only we manage our externals well. And Bill has learned a lot, you know, in the 15 or 20 years that he's 15 years, I guess, he's been sober. And no, 45, 10 years he's been sober. And he understands that that humility and God consciousness is really the answer. And you can hear that in this paragraph.
So I have a question for you, and I want to make sure I stay on track here and don't go down a rabbit hole too far. But we're talking about establishing the traditions here, and I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm not sure how you'll answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
In the process, this is what I've observed. In the process of folks trying to change the basic structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things that I witnessed a very long time ago and still goes on today is the creation of specialty meetings. You know what I mean by specialty meetings?
I do.
Okay. So it more commonly was there were stag meetings, men only. So then there were women's meetings. Then there were, more as of late, there was LGBTQ meetings, and then there was closed meetings. Then there was semi-closed. We have semi-closed meetings in some parts of Oregon. I'm not sure what that means. And it almost like whatever topic you can think of or whatever lifestyle or whatever you pick your poison, you could make a specialty meeting out of it. Now, how that relates to developing traditions, is that a traditions violation?
You know, that's a really good question. And I would basically say, if when someone who's not part of the specialty group that the meeting is developed for comes in and they don't do an immediate group conscience to open the meeting up, yes, they're breaking traditions. However, let's just say you have a men's meeting and a woman comes off the street, you know, oh my God, I need a meeting, you know, what the meeting can do is have an immediate group conscience and open the meeting up that one time for the person who really needs the meeting. And if they operate like that, they're not a tradition violation. Now some people really get crazy. They have invitation only meetings. You'll find this in Hollywood, and I can understand it. I can understand it because, you know, rock stars or movie stars, if they start going to the regular meetings down the street in 5 minutes, there'll be 600 people there all trying to get jobs from them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can even understand. Now, here's the ultimate guiding principle behind those specialty meetings. There are no rules. There are but traditions. And we have more of a right to break a tradition then AA has the right to punish us for breaking it.
Yes, I've heard you say that before, and I love it. So I have seen this happen. I've seen women come into a men's meeting, and I've seen it happen both ways. They very politely let her know that this is a men's meeting, and you can come back tomorrow at 8 o'clock. And I've also seen it go the other way, where they take what I call an immediate group conscience. But then there's this thing... this one group I'm thinking of their definition of a group conscience only can happen during the business meeting. You can't take an immediate group conscience. And it gets to the point sometimes where I think we get so complicate it all instead of keeping it simple, when I really don't think it's that hard or that difficult to make the primary purpose. I mean, doesn't the primary purpose trump everything?
Well, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So membership in AA, in the meetings. Now here's the thing. Each group is autonomous. They are allowed to put together bylaws and processes and formats the way they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the ultimate authority over whether they're doing something that's spiritually unsound is the group. The group will be in trouble. I mean, these are best practices. These are practices that have been found to be really sound. If mm-hmm. you go outside those guidelines, you can, but we have seen through much experience that it's not a very good idea to do that. So these women's meetings and these men's meetings, and there's pilot meetings and there's lawyer meetings and there's closed invitation only meetings, and there's all kinds of LGBTQ meetings. There's all these different meetings. Alcoholics Anonymous itself doesn't bother with any of them. As a matter of fact, they'll put them in the inner group meeting list if you ask them mm-hmm. to. They don't see it as a fight that they're willing to have.
Right.
But if you want to be a tradition lawyer, you want to be a strict tradition lawyer, yeah, those groups can be seen as violating tradition. But it's going on so long that people just don't really see an issue with it anymore.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, when I see somebody hurting and they're coming in and they're obviously, it took everything in their being just to walk through the door. What I see is an alcoholic who is suffering that needs the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to be willing to reach out and grab theirs. That's all I see. I don't see any rules or traditions or I just see somebody that could die if we turn them away. Yeah.
Sure. And most groups, most of the time they'll make accommodations. At the very least, they'll send somebody outside to talk with you and to spend the hour, one-on-one with you if that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't speak for AA. I'm not a definitive voice. I'm not the ultimate, person with the correct position, but I'm just sharing with you, some of the things that I've seen.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. So it says here, a non-AA reader can be heard to exclaim, "This looks very serious for the future of these people. No organization, no rules, no authority. It's anarchy. It's dynamite. It's atomic. It's bound to blow up. Public relations, indeed. If there's no authority, how can they have any public relations policy at all? That's the very defect which ruined the Washingtonian Alcoholics 100 years ago. They mushroomed to 100,000 members, then collapsed. No effective policy or authority, quarreled among themselves. So finally got a black eye with the public. Aren't these AAs just the same kind of drunks, the same kind of anarchists? How can they expect to succeed where the Washingtonians failed? Good questions, these. Have we the answers? Well, we must never be too sure. There is reason to hope that we have, because forces seem to be at work in AA that were little evident among our fellow alcoholics in the 1840s. For one thing, our AA program is spiritually centered. Most of us have found enough humility to believe in and depend upon God. We have found that humility by facing the fact that alcoholism is a fatal malady over which we are individually powerless. The Washingtonians, on the contrary, thought drinking to be just another strong habit, which could be broken by willpower, as expressed in pledges. plus the sustaining force of mutual aid through an understanding society of ex-drunks. Apparently, they thought little of personality change and nothing at all of spiritual conversion. And that's true. You know, they bonded together and they banded together. And this would be like meeting makers making it with no program.
Right.
You know, you go to two meetings a day, you know, you can stay sober for 5 years on two meetings a day, whether you do any spiritual work or not. But the minute, you know, the minute you become inconsistent with, you know, all that activity and camaraderie, you know, you're prey to a relapse. The same thing happened with the Washingtonians. As soon as their little groups broke up, they all got drunk because there was no spiritual awakening as the result of steps because they didn't take any.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So there are people that become meeting dependent rather than God dependent. And that's, I mean, I found that in my own life. I was so dependent on meetings that, boy, heaven forbid we had the COVID thing hit back when I first came in the rooms. I'd have been in trouble.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, consistent and aggressive meeting attendance when you're early on is mm-hmm. a great way to kind of cement you into the fellowship.
Yeah.
But like Bill is saying, you know, the personality change and spiritual conversion that he's talking about, those are the things that are transformative. And I believe those are the things that bring about the state that they talk about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, called recovered.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen to that.
Mutual aid plus pledges did do a lot for them, but it wasn't enough. Their individual egos still ran riot in every channel save alcohol. Self-serving forces having no real humility, having little appreciation that the penalties for too much self-will is death to the alcoholic, having no greater power to serve, finally destroyed the Washingtonians. Wow. And did he really dig into this, and did he get this right? Individual egos running riot, continuing to run riot, no real humility and little appreciation that self-will is death to the alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, that's a powerful paragraph.
Yeah.
When therefore we AAs look to the future, we must always be asking ourselves if the spirit which now binds us together in our common cause will always be stronger than those personal ambitions and desires which tend to drive us apart. So long as the positive forces are greater, we cannot fail. Happily, so far, the ties that bind us have been much stronger than those that might break us. Though the individual AA is under no human coercion, it is at almost perfect personal liberty, we have nevertheless achieved the wonderful unity on vital essentials. And there's, I think the main reason is, you know, without the meetings of AA, especially when we're early on, we're not going to get any traction in this thing called recovery leading to recovered. And if all these, you know, everything started for me with meetings. I don't know about you, Monty.
Me
but,
too.
You know, I went to meetings for probably 6 months before I knew there was a program of recovery. You know?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. It was introduced to me at the meeting level.
So what it looked like for me in the early days was massive amount of meeting attendance. A sponsor, you know, keeps track of whether you're going to stay consistent in meetings. And if somebody needs a recovery experience, just get them to the meeting and let the meeting do the work. But that's not the best process. You know, the 12 steps are the process for what he calls spiritual conversion. The 12 steps are for that process. For example, the 12 steps of our AA program are not crammed down anybody's throat. They are not sustained by any human authority. Yet we powerfully unite around them because the truth they contain has saved our lives, has opened the door to a new world. Our experience tells us these universal truths work. The anarchy of the individual yields to their persuasion. He sobers up and is led little by little to complete agreement with our simple fundamentals. And that's absolutely true for me. I was the most sarcastic, argumentative, judgmental, contrary, contentious kind of person you could ever imagine when I showed up. And little by little, things. There's a commercial on that I hear all the time. And part of the commercial, the guy says, "A tiger never changes his stripes." And what that saying means is, once you're a scumbag, you're never going to change. And Monty, as well as I do, that incredible change is available when somebody applies, a spiritual way of life. You can change your stripes, and little by little, I did that. I probably wouldn't even be recognizable to myself, in my first week when I struggled myself sober.
Absolutely. I've been asked before, do I have a vivid memory of who I used to be? In some aspects I do, but I don't recognize that guy, Chris. I just don't. And I mean, it's a total flipped on its head kind of life, that I would never have dreamed possible. And that's why I tell people, you don't want to miss this thing. Amazing things happen. And for the most part, it's not that circumstances change so much, although they can, but the work that's done from the inside out, it just blows your mind. People that would bet their life on the fact that you would never change are proven wrong constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. Ultimately, these truths govern his life, and he comes to live under their authority, the most powerful authority known, the authority of his full consent willingly given. He is ruled not by people, but by principles, by truths, and as most of us would say, by God.
Mm.
And I believe the whole point, I believe the 12 steps are personal, inner pathway to connection with the divine.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe the 12 steps. And we become willingly ruled by principles, by truths, and by seeking God's will in our life. And it does not sound like a great recovery process for a progressively fatal illness.
Yeah.
but the thing is, it is. I don't know of anything better than the 12 steps for a recovery process from alcoholism. I mean, a lot of people come up with a lot of things, and sure. And they're kind of a fad for a while, and they make people some money for a while. But they don't have the last thing. We're around 87 years now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I've heard it said before that, if you apply and implement the spiritual disciplines, if you take these 12 steps and you truly move through them and apply them in your life, it is a very, very difficult thing to end up drinking again.
Yeah.
In fact, I would go so far to say you can't. Yeah. If I'm working with somebody and they drink again, I can guarantee you there is some portion of that process that they have skipped over, missed out on, or just haven't done thoroughly.
I'm with you on that. Absolutely. Now, some might ask, what has all this got to do with an AA public relations policy? An older AA would say plenty. Well, experience shows that in AA, no policy can be created and announced full-blown, much less effectively enforced by human authority. We are nevertheless faced with the problem of developing a public relations policy and securing for it the only authority we know, that of common understanding and widespread, if not universal, consent. When this consent is secured, we can then be sure of ourselves. AAs will everywhere put the policy into effect as a matter of course, automatically. But we must at first be clear on certain basic principles. And these must have been well tried and tested in our crucible of experience. In forthcoming articles, I shall therefore try to trace the development of our public relations from the very first day we came to public notice. This will show what our experience has already taught us. Then every AA can have a real background for constructive thinking on this terribly vital matter, a matter on which we dare not make grave mistakes, upon which over the years we cannot afford to become unsound. You know, one of the things that, Bill Wilson was really kind of afraid of, Monty, was he was really, really worried that there was going to be people who were power drivers who would come in and try to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, would try to, you know, change things, would you know, would put on TV shows or radio shows and really blast, you know, their version of Alcoholics Anonymous out into the media in different ways. And so he was very, very interested, even from the earliest days, about making sure there wasn't a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's GSRs and DCMs and the delegates, and there's a board of directors, and there's a COO and CEO. And yeah, all that is absolutely true. And they have absolutely no power to make us do anything.
Right.
So he always wanted to discourage the people whose egos were running riot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there. Well, hey, truth be known, because that's one of our main problems, right? The rooms are filled with egos running riot.
Yeah. There's really not any much doubt about that.
No.
One qualification, however, a policy isn't quite like a fixed truth. A policy is something which can change to meet variable conditions, even though the basic underlying truths upon which it is founded do not change at all. Our policy might, for example, rest upon our 12 steps for its underlying truths, yet remain reasonably flexible so far as the means or methods of its application is concerned. Hence, I earnestly hope thousands of AAs start thinking a great deal about these policy matters, which are now becoming so important to us. It is out of our discussions, our differences of opinion, our daily experiences, and our general consent that the true answers must finally come. So another thing that was really, really cool about Bill, he always would say, we know only a little, you know, more will be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's be open-minded. Let's continue to learn from our experience. You know, we haven't learned everything yet. You know, it was really kind of a very, very humble way of approaching. You know, he in 1945 he still was running Alcoholics Anonymous, him and Dr. Bob. So it's neat that he's really pointing out that differences of opinion, daily experience, general consent, and how answers based on experience are going to come. You know.
My sponsor, when we were going through the traditions and studying the traditions, he would remind me on a regular basis something that he's alluding to here. Where he says, yet remain reasonably flexible so far as the means or method of its application is concerned. He would tell me, listen, the traditions are written in Jell-O. He said, you know, they should never be broke, but they must be flexible. And if you don't allow that, then they'll just automatically be broken by default. I really appreciated that because I think that's us, right? I mean, we get so stringent about things sometimes. We do it with our different religious faiths. We do it in our different civic organizations. You know, I was very active with the Boy Scouts of America as a child and then later on as a leader, and there were some very strict rules that seem to always get broken because they were so stringent, you know? And I think we can do that in our 12-step fellowships if we're not careful.
Sure, sure. I agree. You know, there's in the 12 and 12, they talk about the bleeding deacon and the elder statesman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I think you have to go through a bleeding deacon stage or you've missed something.
I think you're right.
But hopefully you mature through that pretty quickly and start to believe that, you know, God expresses himself in the group conscience.
Yeah.
And you start to just trust more in the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Since here, as an older member, I may be able to marshal the facts and help analyze what has happened so far. Perhaps I can even make some suggestions of value for the future. But that is all. Whether we are going to have a clear-cut, workable public relations policy will finally be determined by all of us together, not by me alone. And the public relations policy ended up becoming attraction, not promotion, right?
Right.
But I've seen people weaponize that
yes.
that public relations policy as a way to be lazy. Yeah. So it's attraction, not promotion. You know, why should I go out trying to find alcoholics to help? Why should I go around to these different institutions? They should come to me. It's attraction, not promotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be weaponized as a way for people to be lazy. Our 12-step responsibility is not attraction rather than promotion. It's seeking out and then communicating with and trying to find people who might be willing, you know, to get over their drinking and might be willing to join us. You know, we were talking just before the meeting about we both have commitments at different facilities where we try to carry a 12-step recovery message. And I think it's incumbent upon us to leave our house sometimes and go and try to do that. Now the public relations policy is attraction, not promotion. And in other words, we don't need spots, you know, TV spots on the Super Bowl. You know, we don't need spokespeople, you know, like doing, you know, infomercials or something, right?
Right.
We have cooperation with professional communities, committees, and we have committees for penal institutions, right? You know,
sure.
And these committees are given a book of best practices. And they're sent out to basically educate people who might not know about Alcoholics Anonymous, about what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it does, and about what Alcoholics is not and what it doesn't do, you know, which is sometimes just as important. So our public, we allow our friends to recommend us, but we continue to maintain a relationship with those friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So this brings me to something that I've heard you say several times, and I certainly echo it a lot. Our public relations policy, I mean, attraction rather than promotion is our public relations policy, not our personal stories. And something I've noticed, I'll just share this with you and the listeners. If those that are listening that are from this area will know exactly what I'm talking about. We have a thing here in Albany called Recovery in the Park. A lot of cities do that kind of stuff. Bridges right. to Recovery, especially in September, National Recovery Month. There's people come out of the woodwork, you know, and the recovery community seems to come together because there's all different 12-step fellowships. There's some organizations that aren't 12-step, but they're recovery focused. You've got some of the treatment providers that come out, you know, and people have their booths and, you know, very similar to things like the CORE conference and that kind of thing, but more of a relaxed level, a park atmosphere, right? And
right.
One of the things that I've noticed, this is the ninth year we've done this in Albany, and everybody from the recovery community, of all different arms of the recovery community, faith-based as well as secular and everything in between, all come out for this event. And all the personal issues and the different, you know, methods, I mean, they get dropped off at the door. People are working in unity. And it's a beautiful thing to watch. But this year was the first year that NA showed up, and AA still won't come. And I don't get that. And I know what I've been told is, well, we don't want to be seen as affiliating. And I'm like, but we have H&I panels. We have public information booths. We go to the high schools. We do all this stuff. You can be part of the function as a community and not affiliate. I don't get it. My co-host Denver and I and Roger McDermott from Huntington Beach, California, we went several years in a row. We would go to Prescott, Arizona to Hope Fest. And it was huge. It's like 8,000 people, and AA's there and NA's there and CR is there and Alcoholics for Christ and Agnostics Anonymous is there. Everybody's there. And everybody's having a great time. So I don't know what the problem is here in Linn County. I don't think it's isolated with just us, though.
Yeah. There's just so much different experience around. And there's so many different kinds of things that are going on. So each area has districts.
Right.
And depending on the enthusiasm of the specific district members who want to get involved in these service positions, that'll really depend upon, you know, how much attention they spend on areas where they should be spending attention. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like I was part of I'm part of Area 44, and I used to be in District 18, and that was about 130 different meetings, right?
Yeah.
In District 18, and it was a dark district. Now, what that meant was there was no real GSRs meeting with DCMs once a month or once every other month, and there were no other committee people. Nobody was on cooperation with the professional community. There was nobody on the jail committee. There was nobody doing the, you know, whatever other positions would be available. And it was kind of a dark district, so things just weren't really happening. Now, 20 miles east, there was one of the most active districts you've ever seen. They had alternate everything. So that every single group had, you know, a GSR and a Grapevine rep, and, you know, and they had alternate everythings. And they were really, really involved in service. Mm. And, you know, they were getting things done kind of the right way. When you get commitments at treatment centers or whatever, you know,
yeah,
they're really, really the cooperation with the professional community people are supposed to help you with that. You know, I've never been helped by that committee myself, but it, you know, when it's working well and it's running right, you know, they're really supposed to be on top of all those commitments and providing literature and, you know, being making sure that the hotline, you know, people have the hotline for connection and right. All that. And some places do all that stuff well and some places don't. You,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So the rest of us, I think, do a pretty good job of communicating that AA is alive and well in Linn County. And here's some schedules. I mean, everybody that completes the Adult and Teen Challenge program, part of their aftercare is they get meeting schedules from me.
Sure.
You know, because you can print them out PDF file online. You don't have to go to Intergroup to get them. But and I think we have a responsibility because we are a community. I mean, my goodness, we went out and involved the community in our shenanigans. So why not involve the community in our successes, you know? And you can do that without breaking any traditions or violating anything.
Right.
Yeah, you can. So, yeah, good deal. All righty. So that wraps it up for this episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. By the way, you can get this book. You can get it on Amazon. We'll link it up at take12radio.com if you'd like to get a copy of it. I got mine in about 2 days, I think it was. It's helpful if you'd like to read along with us as well. Any closing thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, you don't know, Monty, I'm really enjoying this. And it's, you know, we're probably going to be doing this for, my guess is we'll be doing it for a year.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of just great Bill Wilson writing. I can't wait to dig into it and really, you know, really unpack it.
Yeah, this is great stuff. And it's so rich. And I'm telling you, listeners, listen, you want to tell your friends about it. Really, because there's so much rich stuff packed in the literature that Alcoholics Anonymous has. I'm not ditching on just meetings, but expand yourself because it's really eye-opening stuff. And it just this kind of thing always enhances my recovery and just my spiritual condition, doesn't it? You?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Listen, folks, if you'd like to email us with any of your comments, or if you'd like to comment on YouTube or any of the podcasting platforms, please feel free to do so. Our email address is take12radio@comcast.net. And until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.